And welcome back. It's peanut buttery, it's chocolatey, it's the flavor merger America craved. That's right, the Peanut Butter Group and Chocolatey Corp have become one. With Chocolatey Corp bringing indulgence to the table and Peanut Butter's eat-anytime ability, it's easy to see how their Jif peanut butter and chocolate-flavored spread will revolutionize snacking. One stock trader even told me, and I quote, "Normally I just buy and sell, but this I'm going to eat." Experience the Jif PBC hype today.
Is that creative financing is more applicable in a declining or recession type market than in an upcycle market.
Welcome to the Rand CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Rand CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella, here in person with the man, the myth, the legend, Will Coleman. Will, how are you on this beautiful day?
Howdy, Mike. Doing well. Just running the marathon one step at a time. And we've got probably one of our favorite guests.
The true man, the myth.
the master coach, the Bill Ham, whatever you'd like to call him. Bill Ham is the chief operating officer at Broadwell Property Group, which operates multifamily properties in the Southeast with a focus on Atlanta, Georgia. And is one of the few, maybe not the few, but one of the rare syndicators that has been through now two cycles. So welcome to the show, Bill.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
So, Bill, when you first got started, I'm sure everyone wants to know how you got your financing. I'm sure you had all clean, easy deals in Macon, Georgia, going through the nice and easy agency debt, asking no questions and everything. Does that sound about right on how you got started in real estate?
What is agency debt? I don't even know what that means. It's actually not how I got started. Not at all. In the beginning, I started in 05, 2005. I was a pilot. I was flying airplanes, kind of walked away from the aviation career, went into real estate full time, flipped houses for a few years, and then moved into multifamily as time went on. Yeah, my first 402 units, actually, I did not use any sort of traditional financing, such as agency debt, Fannie Freddie is what we're talking about, or even any of the banks. It was all creative financing. The first portfolio was all creative financing. Lease options, seller financing, debt partners, credit card, you name it. I probably was out there making it up. And that's how I got into my first portfolio. Not clean deals. Not distressed assets mostly. You know, they were people that had problems. They were assets that had problems. And I went in and created a problem-solving offer and created that first portfolio. And that's how I got into it. Didn't get into agency debt and nice clean deals for some years in the beginning. That took a little while.
And it, obviously the reasoning for getting into that type of financing would be the kind of market cycle and the right scenarios you're buying deals in. How similar is that to now?
It is and it isn't. Number one, yes, you're absolutely right. We have to pay attention to our market cycles, and it's what I call the three pillars of real estate. It's debt, exit strategy, market cycle. A market cycle meaning the rise and the fall in the market. That can mean economically, it can mean specific to a type of real estate, such as apartments or houses or whatever. In those different things cycle differently. It can even be down to a city. So back in 05, it was a couple of years before 08, the world was great. Real estate was great. Everything was super hot. Debt was easy to get. You could go get loans. There weren't as many deals, but you could certainly get lending quite easily. 08 hits, and then the debt kind of pulls back because of the recession market. And then all of a sudden, there's not as much lending out there. The lending that's out there is tight. It's had what we call a flight to quality. The banks and the lenders are not really looking at distressed assets, things that are not necessarily performing at the highest financial level. So therefore, there were plenty of deals, no money to buy them. And here we are now in the peak of a market cycle, plenty of money, no deals, right? And so that's the difference in the market cycles. And so I can see where we're at. I'm seeing the signposts kind of passing by pretty quickly. And what I'm watching is debt. I'm tracking the debt market. And I know, Will, that's your specialty with Rand Capital. And for everybody listening, Will and I have kind of gone back and forth a few times. We've had a few public debates in the middle of rooms and things of the nature at our seminars.
Guys are saying the same thing, but it's always just different sides of the
yeah, you love Will, love having him in my room because we always I get to pick on him and then we go back and forth about debt. But and to quote you, you know, debt is the cyclical engine of our market. I love that. I love that you said that. I think that's a great way of stating it. And I'll continue that comment with debt kills the market. And I know Will and I've gone around with that one, but what occurs is lenders, when I'm saying debt, it's lenders, they can typically see ahead into a market cycle a little bit further than the rest of us. So they say, hey, it looks as if we may be heading into a recession cycle. So lenders start pulling back. Their criteria for loans gets more stringent. What we see is it really has nothing to do with interest rates. That's where a lot of people get confused and they say, yeah, but the interest rates are really low. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is their criteria for qualification. When talking about agency debt and lenders and things like that, they've started really looking heavily at resume. If you're brand new to the business and you're just now getting in and don't have a resume, agency debt, Freddie, Fannie, going to be a little bit hard to get because they're really leaning on experience. Now what you're going to see next is they're going to start lowering loan to value. Oh yeah, I've already seen them do that. Next, what you're going to see is they're going to stop lending on not affordable housing. Fannie and Freddie will never stop lending on affordable housing. What they will do is they'll just stop lending as much. They'll lower loan to value and they'll cause you to put up higher reserves you know, for these older assets. And so that's kind of what I'm looking at. I remember this in the last recession and seeing these lenders pull back. The pulling back almost is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It causes the recession. It causes, as the lenders withdraw capital from the economy, it makes money more expensive. And there, in turn, typically lowers the real estate values. When this occurs and a seller is trying to sell, and they've got a slightly distressed asset. Let's just say, for example, the property is not at a 1.2 debt service ratio with 90% occupancy for the prior 90 days and all the things that they love to see. It's not that. Seller needs to sell, not a lot of debt in the market. How do we buy those deals? That's where creative financing steps in. And that's going to be a solution that we're going to lean
Bill Hamm, that's a couple of years. The Bill Hamm method right here in his book. So,
exactly. So I remember you telling me a little bit about this book. You started writing it maybe 10 years ago or so, or a while ago.
Yeah, technically, yes.
Yeah, and you kind of just kept it as material. And right. Maybe a year or so ago, I remember going to hear you speak in 2018 or 19, and you were saying, we're close to the peak. We don't know where it's going to be, but our investment strategy is preparing for the downturn. And right. In terms with your book as well, you had this material from a while ago and you kind of thought if there is a downturn, this would be a great educational piece for people that are looking for financing in a downturn. Correct. So can you kind of tell us about the process of the book and the value that it does bring?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, the book is called Creative Cash. That's the title. Selfless plug, by the way, you can get Creative Cash on Amazon, Audible, and Kindle. So go get the book and please give me a review. Okay, all that aside. Yeah, basically what it was originally when I was going through the last recession, I was just getting into the education space. I was working for another teacher out there and I had become a coach and was starting to get traction teaching and this kind of stuff. And so I created a home study course is what it really was. It was something that I was going to try and go on stage and sell as a real estate guru and get up there and do the old run to the back of the room, get your credit card out, take action. You're going to get rich. You know, I gave all that.
Tony Robbins coming to a stage near you.
Yeah, I gave all that a shot and failed. I mean, hard fail. The material was great. I'm not that kind of salesperson. I'm not the get on stage and rah, rah, and it's going to be great. And everybody's all. It just wasn't me. And I come to realize over the years that I am not about motivation. I am about education. If you need motivation, I can recommend some gurus for you. You know, there's one that comes on about midnight. And I think he's got some CDs out there you can buy. I'm just saying, you know, look, if you want information, I'm your guy. If you want to be motivated to buy real estate, don't talk to me. You know what I'm saying? That's not what I do. You need to have your why in place. If you've got it in place, I can help you out. So that's what I was doing back then. I kind of created this home study course and just really did bad with selling it. And so I just kind of stuck it in the closet and didn't mess with it. And then really the information became less applicable. And let me point that out is that creative financing is more applicable in a declining or recession type market than in an upcycle market, which is why nobody's really been talking about lease options, seller financing, and doing a lot of this stuff, because there hasn't been a lot of need for it. And so that's why after a few years after coming out of the recession, 2012, 2013, you know, I realized these techniques weren't working as well anymore. Set that stuff aside. And about a year ago, I was at a Jake and Gino event, and I had been talking about creative financing and some other things. And Julia Barbaro, Gino's wife, looked at me and said, "Hey, you should write a book on that." And I said, "Okay." And I wrote a book. So what I did is I went and pulled all that old material out and I recompiled it into a book format. Brought it up to current standards, kind of edited and changed a lot of stuff, rewrote it for more current market cycle, added in some new material. And that's what the book is. It's how I built that first 400 unit portfolio using creative financing and all the techniques that go with that. And it's going to be what you're going to want to use going forward in the next 2-3 years. So again, that's kind of why you haven't heard a lot about it over the last few years. It's about solving problems. In such a hot real estate market, if a seller had a problem, they could probably just sell a property, get asking price, probably even more, problem solved. Yes, but when the lenders pull back and that availability of funds no longer exists and you have a real estate problem, you're gonna find yourself in a new world. That's where creativity is gonna come in.
And I think that the biggest piece to that is identifying the market cycle, right? When
correct.
When everything's bullish, everything's great, debt's easy to grab, but I think Howard Marks is once debt freezes much quicker than the equity market. So it's important to identify that. And like you said, I think the biggest thing is solving problems, right? So
it is.
That is 100%, because I mean, even we're looking at deals and it could be an owner is like, they might have it paid off or they have like distressed debt. It's how do you solve that problem? Is it assuming a loan? What have you? So I think it's just going in solutions oriented, not just kind of sticking to your guns of, well, I only do agency, but you know, you got to think like a transactor, right? And it's solving that problem for them.
Yeah. And, you know, my recommendation is if you can get agency loans, do it. If you can get an agency debt on that property, you should go for it. That's a great debt. Watch out. It's not going to be so easy to get here soon. And that's when we're going to have a different set of problems. When agency starts pulling back and they're not doing distressed assets, or let me rephrase that, when a product is viable today but becomes inviable tomorrow, the lending criteria doesn't change. Lenders, all right, so they always, and Will, jump in and correct me here, but they always basically lend on a 1.2 to 1.25 debt service ratio. That's the holy grail for the lenders, is that debt service ratio. What if your tenants stop paying rent? It's a great property. It's a great asset, great neighborhood. There's nothing wrong with it. But if the tenants become financially distressed, like they are right now for COVID and things of that nature, that debt service ratio can fall by no fault of your own. So the lenders are just going to turn a blind eye to that. And they're going to say, oh, don't worry about it. We'll just lend on a 1.1. Or, hey, I got it. We'll just lend on a 1.0 because you're such a nice person. Does that occur, Will? Have you seen any agency loans where they're lending on a 1.1 debt service ratio yet?
No, not at all.
Exactly. So the lending criteria never changes. It's the same thing always. It's the deals that change. It's the market that changes. The lenders do the same thing they've always done. And what was financeable yesterday, if we go through a down cycle and a recession, may become less financeable because of operations, and it's nothing we can do. And so therefore, you're going to need some creativity to get out of there. I believe this may be a real big solution on the other side of, unfortunately, the eviction moratorium that we're under. You know, at the time of this recording, we're in quarter one of 2021. There's still an eviction moratorium in place. We're seeing at the moment a lot of delinquency in the market. A lot of tenants are starting to fall behind. You know, right now I'm seeing anywhere between 10 to 20% delinquency in a lot of the properties that I'm looking at. And the news is saying that a lot of properties are 18 to 21% delinquent. Well, take that property and walk into to Fannie Mae's office and see if they want to do a loan. Not likely. Or they will absolutely do the loan. They're just going to lower the heck out of that loan to value. Yep. They'll do the loan. Yeah. And now all of a sudden your cash on cash is no good. Okay. So what do we do? Well, lower the price or borrow less money. Those are your only two levers you can pull if the loan to value is too low. And if you can get the price down, you should, because the lender's just going to lend you less money. Simple as that. You know, it's how it works. And so as the market shifts down, we got to come up with some other techniques.
And I think I'm not necessarily seeing it yet on the lending side. I think we're definitely seeing lenders being needing more experience from the borrowers. So, I mean, Freddie Mac flat out, and this was a while ago, this is six, 7, 8 months ago, when they, one, you got the reserves, right? That's obvious. And then they increase their restrictions on experience. So they need to see longer term experience. So that hasn't really been a huge hurdle for a lot of people to overcome, because you can just get a partner, or you can, it'll go from 75 or 80 to 75 and 75 to 70 rather than, it's not like you're disqualified, but the terms will be brought back a little bit. If you have, maybe you've got 1 year of experience or no years of experience. But something that I have seen recently that I think would be interesting for you to know, Bill, is I've had a lot of bridge loans come on my plate. Like, we're quoting probably right now 10 loans, and I'd say maybe four of those are bridge. And I've never seen that many bridge. And, you know, we got two under application that are bridge here recently. That's not something that I've ever seen. And I've spoken to other lenders that are seeing the same thing. So what my instincts is not so much that we're seeing the distress yet, but it's more so investors are desperate for yield. So they're taking on, they're looking for properties that are heavier value add rather than the kind of, you know, just paint the exterior and that's considered value add.
It's like 2019 all over again. Everyone pour $10,000 a door in as fast as you can, flip it in 2 years.
So I'm curious, your thoughts on if that means anything, that because I've spoken to two other lenders and they're saying this is going to be the year of bridge. Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, it means honestly, without being arrogant, that I'm right. It means what I'm telling you is accurate. It means that agency debt, the our top tier, you know, and I don't. You want to see the best debt, but typically the most stable, lowest interest rate, longest term, stable multifamily debt is retreating, and other types of lenders are stepping in to fill the gap. What we saw originally, you're seeing a lot of, and you probably won't see this, but you're seeing a lot of bridge loans. Well, what I'm seeing from a lot of students and a lot of the other people is they're just not bringing the loan at all. They're just going right on over to BB&T, Bank of America, Community Bank, because Community Bank is now really starting to try and compete with Freddie and Fannie to grab customers they otherwise wouldn't have had access to in better times, which again is a sign that the top is retreating. And if there becomes any more distress in the area, you'll start to see all of it retreat. You'll see the bridge lenders and they'll still do it, but the interest rates are going to go way up. The loan to value is going to come down. The reserves are going to go higher, and that's what we're going to see. Now, again, we can take all of these conversations and let's add in one of my favorite conversations, the CapEx tsunami. And that's another killer that I think we've all got coming. Everybody's running around worried about COVID and this kind of stuff. And I'm not making light of the actual disease itself, but I don't think COVID is going to affect our real estate world as much as some of the other issues that we have going on, such as the C space, our affordable housing product in America, the majority of it, unless it was built to be affordable, if it's what do we call it? NOAA. Naturally occurring affordable housing. That's what they call that. Natural occurring affordable housing, which means affordable housing that was not built to be affordable housing. It's just aged until it became affordable. That is largely our 60s and 70s product. So our NOAA affordable housing product is aging out. You think we got affordable housing crisis right now? Sit tight. Let's let a few more of these buildings get to the point where it makes no sense to fix them up because it's just too far gone. You're going to have a whole nother issue on your hands. Lenders are not really going to want to fund those C assets, especially the tenants aren't paying rent. The properties themselves are going to go outside of cost basis. What I'm saying is when you buy the property and then you actually have to calculate in all the capital expense that's going to need to go into it, the plumbing, the roofs, the da 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 da, your cost basis, the purchase price plus the renovations, will exceed the value of the property itself. And the only way you can deal with that is then to take the original purchase price and lower that considerably so that you have the purchase price plus the renovation cost and there's still some profit. Well, that's an implosion of value, not explosion, implosion of value, isn't it? Which means a lot of people are probably going to lose their properties because it doesn't make any sense for you to come in and just buy it. Therefore, that's where you're going to see creative financing really get ramped up, is in the affordable housing space, the C space, especially in older buildings where you're just not going to get funding. And I think that aging asset problem is going to be a much larger issue in America, real estate, than COVID or tenants or even politics. I think politics are going to be a close second area to watch out for, but I think those are your biggies right there.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the pandemic is kind of just what's in front of us now, and people are focusing living day by day on that. And then I think, I mean, we've bought older products and we've gone through CapEx budgets in 18 months. And
nobody's talking about it. Except for me, nobody is talking about this CapEx problem. And it's a major American infrastructure issue from our belts and roadways all the way into multifamily. That product's getting old. And it seems, you know, to be sort of extra negative, if we're going to call it that, the politicians are moving in favor of the tenants, which means the politicians as well as code enforcement in your city is going to demand that property be maintained at a higher level. Good. We need to take care of our tenants and we certainly don't need to be slumlords. Yes, but that comes at a cost. And so if the ability to raise revenue declines due to a recession, but the cost of repairs and maintenance escalates, you're going to get pinched somewhere in the middle. And that's where I'm predicting you want to stay out of that space for a little while until you can get in with some creativity, mitigate a fair amount of that risk. You know, I don't like the idea of going and getting a loan and letting a seller off scot-free. Me write them a check, they get rich, go away, and I get to inherit the problem unless I'm about to make a lot of money. And that, and the prices right now in the C space are inflated. You know, the spread between the A and the C is way too narrow on the cap rate spread for the metrics to be fundamentally there for the C space. And that concerns me.
And Bill, I think the last time you spoke, I think this was the best advice I heard is, you know, people are going to ask you, well, Bill, how do you know? And I think the best advice is you go, well, have you seen New York, California, like all these different spaces, right? You're like, well, how are you figuring this out? And you're like, well, I open up the New York Times and all these articles every day.
Every day.
What are the headlines? And so
every day.
And it's, you know, it's a live case study and people are like, oh, that's not going to happen to me because I'm in Tennessee or I'm here, I'm there. And it's like, what happened there? It's kind of like the shutdowns, right? Most of it is like, oh, that state did it, then that state did it, then this state did it. And then, so I think it's, when people ask how do you know? I think it's just opening up in front of your eyes, just kind of what's going on in the news.
Absolutely. But you're hitting it, Mike. I think a lot of our more landlord liberal states or more tenant friendly states are the states to watch as your case study. Keep an eye on New York, New England area, keep an eye on all that, keep an eye on the California market, because these are indications as to where the laws may go. Yes, being in Atlanta, you guys up in Nashville and all in Knoxville, yes, we're in a much more landlord-friendly state, but I got an idea that that is going to start to shift, as we've obviously seen shifts in our politics. You know, and obviously a big shift there. So I would be paying close attention to some of these markets and don't start that attitude of, oh, that always happens to somebody else. See, that'll never happen to me. That always happens to the other person. Ooh, careful. You know, we don't want to go get crazy, but I would certainly plan on, you know, some of these changes possibly coming in our direction. And just be careful. It's good to be a little bit skeptical. It's good to be a little bit paranoid. A little paranoia is helpful. You know, it's healthy. Don't go crazy, mind you, but, you know, a little paranoia.
Look at the migration. I mean, look at the migration. New York is coming to Nashville. Illinois is coming to Tennessee. California is coming to Texas, making it purple. So when you live in those states and you're like,
you don't say that about Texas, all right?
I mean, hey.
Like dodging bullets there, yeah, right?
Hey, but Atlanta. You know what I mean? Like, if you see in there and those people are coming, it changes that infrastructure. So it won't happen. It could happen. So like you said, When you, I think too, it's seeing, being that skeptical, right? If you see a deal and underwrite it the first time and you get good returns, you might, you probably did something wrong. So double check.
Yeah, or you're lucky either way. But yeah, yeah, we've got to be a student in the math. We got to be a student of science. You got, you know, everything that I'm telling you, right, is based on some sort of metric in the world I can point to empirically, mathematically, and go, there it is. It's not opinions. It's not philosophy. I'm not even trying to be right. As a matter of fact, I would like to be wrong about most of the things I say. I just don't think I am. And it's because I'm pointing at a lot of one experience, two, I've been through the scene, you know, and I know what to look for, and I'm seeing all the metrics. And I think a lot of people don't like the information that the equation is giving us at the moment. So they turn a blind eye to it because they don't like it. It doesn't fit their narrative. And so be very careful about running around co-signing your own BS. Watch out for that. You know what I mean? So you got to kind of keep an edge to yourself. You got to kind of keep a little skepticism and be careful. You know, and that's a good way to stay safe. We want to make money, but we want to keep it. You don't want to make money and then give it all back in the next cycle, because then you're only going to be in real estate for about 4 or 5 years and then you're going to be out. So we have to learn how to, you know, shift and change, you know, strategies. I, you know, something else I want to point out too is don't get stuck in the concept that up is good, down is bad. That's another really, really bad point of view that we need to get away from. People thinking that the up market is the good market and the down market is the bad market. Not true. You can have plenty of problems in an up market. You can have plenty of opportunities in a down market. It's not true. I mean, look, are there a ton of deals right now? No. It's a great market. It's hot. Well, that's a problem. Not a lot of deals. Well, then we're going to go into a down cycle. There'll be a lot of deals, and then there may not be living. There's opportunity everywhere. Don't get into the negative concept that, you know, half of the market cycle is good and then half the market cycle is bad. That's not true. We just have to adjust our strategy. So I am actually quite excited about the upcoming market. I think there's going to be a shift of wealth. I think that we're looking at a lot of new paradigms coming down the road, just to be very current. This stock debacle, you know, with the GameStop stock and AMC and all this kind of stuff. That is, whatever your opinion on all that is, it's a paradigm shift is what it is. It's the little guy poking the big guy, you know, and it's a David and Goliath. And I think we're starting to see a shift to some of that. So I'm very excited to see where the world shakes out here in the future. But it's going to be changed. A lot of people don't like change. Too bad. That's coming.
And I think Will's, when you said that some markets are down and it's not bad, like I thought of Will's mentor, Hadar.
Yeah.
He bought in Little Rock, Arkansas when it was like at the very bottom. And now a year later, it's been on the uptick and he doubled the value. He doubled the NOI in a year. So it's operations and increasing. So it's being opportunistic and finding those up and emerging markets, just like in the private equity space and everywhere else, right? You got to look at a macro approach and not just throw money where money already is.
Yeah, it's knowing what you're looking at. It's knowing deal analysis, which Hadar is an expert at that. It's knowing the value of the asset. When is it a good deal or not? You know, that's the key is knowing what stuff's worth. If you don't know what stuff's worth, how are you going to make money? So you got to be super expert at knowing the values, real values, not pie in the sky values, not magic values that we're going to get after we magically raise the rent $1 million a door, you know, this kind of stuff. I'm seeing a lot of very, very aggressive underwriting recently. And it's so aggressive that I'm afraid it's justification. It's pencil whipping is what I call it. You know, this is a silly price, but that's okay because I can raise the rents and then it won't be a silly price. Ooh, whoa, pump those brakes. That's not good underwriting. You know, if it's a good deal, and you can raise the rents and then it becomes a great deal, good. If it's a bad deal and you'll make it a good deal by simply raising your rents, watch out. I mean, that is extremely risky right now. You know, I'm cautioning all my students against the renovation model at the moment. If you think the rents are low, go raise them. Don't spend any money, just do it. You know, supply and demand is tight. Why spend money? Raise the rents. If you really think they're low, do it. Just raise the rents. Let's hang on about 2 or 3 years and then come back in and do renovations and value add, because then you won't catch the falling knife. You know, you don't want to go putting a lot of money into assets right now for the potentiality of the decline, you know, in the price, and then you don't get the money back out of it. So you want to wait till that market's on the upswing before you start putting money back into buildings.
So what is your current investment strategy? I mean, I think we've talked about a lot of risk in the market, and there is, right? I mean, I've said this many times, Howard Marks is probably my favorite economic thinker, and he describes the current market environment as the highest risk, lowest return market he's ever seen, and potentially in history, where just the relationship between risk and return is the most out of balance he's ever seen.
I would agree.
Potentially. But then there's the idea, right, that there's nowhere to put capital and rates are so low that we're probably going to see inflation in the next 3-4 years. So, multifamily real estate, inflation may cause values to continue this kind of insane valuation increase, which on top of that, we may not be able to raise rents because of the current economic environment. So, I mean, Peter Linneman, I didn't read the article, but I saw the headline that he's stating that we're entering the third phase of the golden era for multifamily just solely due to inflation. And there may be a situation where the cash flow is going to significantly decrease. And this is almost a value play because of inflation. I mean, that's a lot that I just spit out, but what is your current kind of investment strategy in today's market?
Practice my golf swing. Practice the old golf. No, kidding. I hate golf. What our investment strategy at the moment is to be exceedingly cautious, to be very careful in our underwriting. And a lot of people ask me that. They say, hey, are you on the sidelines now? No, not functionally, not technically. I underwrite deals weekly. Am I buying any of them? No. So am I on the sidelines? Yes, only because I know what to offer. I know what the metrics to multifamily are, and I'm not gonna argue with gravity. I'm not gonna defy the metrics of multifamily because I'm out to make a living. I'll go flip burgers before I take some investor's money, put it into a deal that I think is risky or that doesn't follow good, solid metrics. And I think a lot of the metrics have left the market. And if that's how we're all gonna do real estate, you all enjoy yourself. I'm going back to that golf game. I'll be back in a couple of years. Not doing it. So our Broadwell Property Group, by the way, is the investment strategy is to have a flight towards quality, is to stay in the better assets that I believe will have longer term hedge against a decline in value. So I'm really kind of saying your B space assets, maybe not even AA assets, because sometimes those decline in a recession too, where people start looking for a little bit more affordable. I think the sweet spot right now is the B space. Probably assets that are built in the 90s, between the 90s and the 2000s, would be ideal. They're not going to have a lot of capital expense items going forward. They've got some physical legs under them, so the building shouldn't be a big surprise. Going to cash flow? Maybe not that much, no. But you'll still be okay because you've put your money and your time and energy into a quality building. And so that's our investment strategy right now, is to be very quality sensitive. And really to stick to the metrics that we know are accurate, that we know are what really create wealth long-term. If everybody else wants to go crazy, fine, go nuts. You all want to go buy, GameStop stocks? Go crazy. I'm not doing it. I don't care how much
GameStop money with my crypto. Come on, Bill.
Don't do it. Don't care, not interested. Don't even want to hear it. No.
Any quick thoughts on crypto?
Yeah. I wish that back in, what was it, 07 or 08, whatever that started. No, it was about 2010. I had started mining it. I actually looked into getting a few computers, and this is when Bitcoin first came out, and I was like, and the math, the coins wouldn't pay for the light bill to mine them. It was going to cost me more in an electric bill than the coins were worth. What a bad idea. God, I was thinking in my, what a bad idea.
You would have never heard of Bilham ever again by 2015.
I'd be floating around on my yacht somewhere. And yeah, I really wish I would have started mining them. Again, it was a negative income model when I first heard about it. And then I kind of never thought about it again. And then all of a sudden, some years later, you're like, oh, Bitcoin. And then all of a sudden, it's $20,000 a coin. And I'm going, God, I wish I had gotten it. No, I don't have a lot of technical opinion on that. I don't, I really don't understand that model that much. I love the blockchain theory. And I think blockchain is technology that is going to really upend a lot of industries and is a great technology. As far as actual Bitcoin is concerned, I really don't know. I don't mine it and I don't buy it and I don't own any. So I don't have a lot of actual opinion on any of that. Not really.
Yeah, just but, curious.
Yeah, but like I said, answer your question, our model is to stick to the metrics that we know keep real estate safe. And Will, I want to point something out because there's a lot of people have been talking about this inflation coming, and well, then aren't the prices going to just continue up? Yeah, I think they might. But I think as we've talked about before, I think what we're going to see is a split, that K-shape in the economy. I think the A's and the B's are going to be where you see a lot of that money flee to hedge against recession or hedge against inflation. But I still don't believe that that is dumb money. And only dumb money is going to go in and start buying old aging C assets and ignore the CapEx cost. Only dumb money is going to do that. And I do not believe that money that is sitting on the sidelines waiting to be aggressive, waiting for a collapse in some sort of value act is going to go in and start buying that. So I still think we're going to see a decline in the C space. Third comment. Okay, let's do this. Let's not worry about real estate ever cash flowing again. Great. All the deals are deals then, aren't they? I love it. Let's do that. Let's have real estate produce no more cash flow because we're all worried about a hedge against inflation. Let's do that. Then the metrics for multifamily have completely left the market. Now all we're doing is buying and selling real estate like a stock. Why does a stock go up that doesn't produce dividends? Hell if I know. You guys buy it and somebody else says, hey, that's a good one. And they buy it and then they buy it and it goes up for no damn reason. Now, if we all want to go out and invest in real estate that way, fine, I'm going to get rich because that means we can point at any deal out there and say, oh, don't worry about cash flow. It's going to go up in value. If that's multifamily and that's where we're headed, great. Let's do that because then all deals are deals, aren't they? If I don't have to worry about producing cash flow and I don't have to worry about feeding investors and giving anybody a pref or a return, great. I'll just buy anything and one day it'll go up in value magically and we'll just sell it and make money. That's flipping absurd. That's ludicrous. But if that's where we're going because of recession, because of inflation, great. I'm going to get rich. But I don't believe that's going to be true. I really don't. That's so much dumb money that I couldn't even imagine. It's saying, you know, let's not worry about cash flow anymore. Okay, then how do we value multifamily if it's not about revenue? I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. And that means that the logic of the business is gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Let's see how that works out for you. Just Bill, saying.
I want to unpack a lot because you kind of said a lot, but I just want to make sure like our listeners understand. Wealth creation is boring. Stick to your lane. And because like we said, the cryptos and not understanding and just really understand the fundamentals of what you're investing in is and staying in that lane, right? Because that's when you see the real opportunity and the ooh shinies and talking to a lot of the Jake and Gino community, like, oh, I'm looking at this class and this class, right? You can pivot slightly, but I think it's you continue to stay in your lane, take your lumps, continue to learn, continue to be a student of the game. That's where the success, the wealth, and also too, a big point is was being a steward for your investors' capital, right? That was like one of the first things you said of going through it. I think a lot of people today are acting out of desperation for act fees and trying to get in the space and want to make a name for themselves, but buying in the high. Really, you have to look at your investors because every time you do a nightmare deal and you have to live through it, every day is a nightmare. And then you have to ask your investors and you won't live long in this business. So I think there's just a lot of great value in what you said prior to this, just to make sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, if you're in this business to serve yourself first, you're not going to be in the business long. I'm not saying you can't do a deal. You make a mistake. Hey, I've made mistakes. I've not made money. I've not made as much money for investors here and there as I meant to. But it was always because something went wrong. We didn't understand or the market just not. It was never because my team didn't follow the metrics. You must be here to serve the investor first, yourself second. Then ultimately you'll make money in real estate. You can cut down on the investors. You can ultimately become your own boss and you can own the whole property yourself. That takes a little while in the beginning. If you're using other people's money, that is not a necessary evil in which just put up with. No, that's a terrible point of view. You're not here for act fees. You're not here for asset management fees. You're here to make your investor money. Yes, you're here to then make yourself a little money at the same time. And if that deal doesn't look like it's going to do that, go work on that golf swing and sit tight because it's better to do no deal than a bad deal. Don't just sit tight and be calm, stick to the metrics.
stay in your lane, as Mike here said. I don't have a lot of comment about other lanes. I will say, whatever lane you're in, master it, become an expert at it, study, whatever lane you're in. And if you can shift lanes and master that one too, go ahead. But if you're shifting lanes without mastery, you're headed for trouble.
All right, Bill. So before we go to our investor pro tip, let's take a moment to hear from our sponsor.
Is your money working as hard as you are? At RAM Partners, we partner with hardworking investors who are seeking true passive income through multifamily real estate. Partnering with RAM means transparent communication with our webinars, monthly statements, and newsletters. For more information, visit rampartners.com to register for our investor portal and to set up a call with our team.
Back. So the Bill Ham, ton of value. I think I have a clue on what your pro tip is going to be, but what is your one investor pro tip for our listeners here today?
One investor pro tip. Don't be so worried about failure. I think that's a big problem that we have in the world, is that people are intolerant to collateral damage. And that may sound flippant, but I think we've gotten soft as a society. We need to learn how to take a few punches a little bit better. We need to thicken up our skin. You got to be ready to make some mistakes and lose some stuff. I have a lot of students come to me and they say, "Oh, Bill, I got to get it right. I'm talking to you. I have got to get it right. I cannot fail." You've already failed. And you've already failed bigger than you ever realized if you're not willing to fail some. So don't think you're going to get it right all the time. And it's kind of the point I bring up about insanity. And I've mentioned this before. What's the common definition of insanity? Well, everybody always says, "Oh, it's doing the same thing, expecting a different result." No, it's not. No, it is not. That is not the definition of insanity. Number one, look it up. That isn't it. Number two, what's the definition of practice? It's doing the same damn thing over and over, not expecting a different result, demanding one. So I think the lack of our tolerance for practice, our lack of our tolerance for failure in America, our thin skin, lack of grit, is what I would tell the listeners. You're going to have to toughen up for. You're going to have to be an entrepreneur. Hey, there's no crying in real estate. So the market sucks. So what? The market's great. So what? You got a job. You got kids. You got things to do. So what? The closing table does not care. You get there, you don't. You know, make it happen.
Yeah, failure is the first step to success. I heard that the other day, and I was like, that's
beautiful. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Yeah,
I was going to say perfect. Fail forward, but all right. And I thought your guess for the pro tip was going to be get the book.
Get the book. That's my second pro tip. Get the book. Yeah, I don't know. That's assumed, right? Yeah.
I will say as a lender, the financing is so important. And I agree. I think we're going into an environment where you need to know alternative types of financing. Agency has already gotten slightly more restrictive on who they've lent to. So far, banks are still pretty aggressive in the multifamily space, but as soon as the collections start to go down, and I have as well, I've spoken to some borrowers that are under contract on deals, and they're noticing that the collections are not as good as they thought. Going into the environment that, even let's say we don't, but it seems like there's a likelihood that we're going into an environment where you need to know creative financing. And I've spoken with Bill a lot, and I'm sure that this book is going to be, you know, one of the few resources that you can really learn for creative financing. And I'm excited myself to read it as a lender and as an investor as well. So I'm very excited, looking forward to it. When's the release date?
Yeah, the release date is February 9th, 2021. So Feb 9th, coming up soon in about 2 weeks or so. Again, it will be on Amazon for the paperback, Kindle, and Audible. So those are your three options. And then we have Gino and I, of Jake and Gino, put together a masterclass. So if you want to download our masterclass, which is about 10 hours of a video course there, go to creativeapartmentdeals.com, creativeapartmentdeals.com. You can get the book and the masterclass there. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, it's broadwellpropertygroup.com. You can just reach out to me at broadwellpropertygroup.com. But release is coming out. I think it's going to be a good book. I'm proud of it. I've had a few people read it behind the scenes. It seems like it's getting some pretty good reviews so far. And there's a lot of not motivation, definitely education. You know, if you want to figure out how to get out there and get creative and solve problems, solve real estate problems, that's what this book really focuses on. It teaches you how to analyze a deal from a non-linear perspective, or at least a non-traditional perspective of, hey, here's the deal. Let's go to the bank. Let's get some money. Let's put down some money. Is this a good deal or not? Well, right now, a lot of deals don't really work with traditional financing, and that's why I'm kind of bringing this out. And so this will be a way that we can all solve some sellers' problems coming up and get paid quite well to do it.
What a perfect Valentine's Day gift to buy the book.
Great
spend
point.
10 hours with Bill.
I never even thought of that.
It's a record.
I love it.
So you guys timed it perfectly.
I'm sure your wife or boyfriend, girlfriend would love a copy of Creative Financing in there. Box of chocolates and get.
I'm getting one for Susie. So
there you go. Creative cash. That's it. Creative cash and a bouquet of roses. That sounds like a great Valentine's Day. Oh, lost my camera.
Financial freedom and some chocolate. Never do.
Yeah, there you go. Creative cash and some chocolate. I think that sounds like what I'm going to get my wife for Valentine's Day.
Thank you so much, Bill, for being on
another
great episode of the Ran Series Show. Buy the book, buy some flowers, and if you have any questions for Bill, please reach out to him. The Bill Ham is the truth, and if you have any questions for us, reach out to us at info@rancierie.com. Until then, we'll see you next week.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.